for NTU at anything whatsoever. He, as if he were just looking at God, so he saw nothing in the world but God. Even then he looked at him himself. So he was a manifestation of God. Everything was a manifestation of God. The whole world, the whole history was filled in with God, 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 everywhere. So he was so lofty that nothing could compare himself to him, or perhaps he stayed besides him. Everything had to flee, had to disappear when God appeared. And indeed, through chance, God had appeared in such a lofty face, lofty personality, that he couldn't see anything else. And he says this in a thousand languages, in a thousand tongues, in a thousand ways of symbolism, that there is nothing but God, there is nothing but God. There is only one actor in the whole history, one actor in the whole world, and the whole creation is just one act of him. He is a sun shining through our windows. He is a player playing through our reeds, our flutes, and so on and so forth. So he actually produces so many symbolisms in his work in order to confide us, in order to tell us and to show us the relationship between the man and God, the relationship between world and God, and so on and so forth. So the Masnavi was born like this in 15 years. So actually, he could not finish it. Because from the very time that it was born, it was not born to end, actually. It was born like an ongoing process, ongoing business, something that he never intended to finish it. And only his death was the point of stop where he ended. There, actually, he said that now the sun is going behind the clouds. That is the very last word. Now the sun is going behind the clouds, and that was the end of his book. And sometimes he said, the rest of the story comes to you, not through me, but through the Holy Spirit. Exactly, he uses the word Holy Spirit. The rest of the story, let me read you. Sometimes I have to read you the poetry in Persian in order for you to get the sense and the rhythm and the rhyme and the beauty of the Baqiya in Gustav and Isaba. Without my language, without the my tongue, you will hear this, the rest of this story by the Spirit, but not by me. So according to him, it was a story that was being told. And he was just a stage, a period in the history, and an instrument in order to tell us part of it, bits of it. And the storyteller, the heavenly storyteller, was there before him and after him. And so it happened perpetually, without being interrupted, without being stopped. So that is what he says. So he never intended to finish it. And only the death, his death, in 1275, was the end point to his storytelling. But the story is being told. Now, that was, this work was, the product of his last 15 years. His worldly life. Besides this, he has got another major work, which is called Divan. That is a collection of his odes and sonnets.
No, it is not divine. It doesn't belong.
belong to Shams. There is no single verse in this whole divan which belongs to Shams. But it is because of the Shams. And that's why it is called divan of Shams. Sometimes actually we mention Shams in places, but not always. And it is not officially or formally dedicated to Shams. Never. You wouldn't find such things in. But everybody, of course, understands that it was actually written, it was told, it was performed under the influence, under the inspiration of Shams. When he suffered from the separation, or perhaps when he was aspiring to the reunion with Shams, or when he transcended Shams' virtues, and Shams became just a transitional figure for him. He transcended him, and Shams was only a name for him. And over and above Shams, actually, he looked into God, and he was talking to him and touching him. At those moments, actually, what Shams was given by him. Therefore, it has got actually the essence of poetry, the essence of poetry. There is no philosophy, even there is no discursive thinking in this book. No discursive thinking whatsoever. He's not philosophy, he's not theology, and then he writes that. He's a pure poet, a pure imagination, a pure union with the God, a pure lover. And he speaks his mind, his soul, his heart so powerfully, that captures you quite naturally. So here is a, we do not really have any poet or any poetry for that matter in Persian language like this. We have great poets like Hafez, like Sa'di, and like others, but Rumi is quintessential, absolutely. Because he is a real poet here, and his poetry does not mean that he was a kind of an imaginal, unrealistic poet. He discovered word after word after word, and he tries to share his experience. It's a kind of experience of spiritual intoxication, a story of separation, story of union, story of love, story of encountering a lofty, as I said, God, which occupies everywhere and leaves no place for anything else. So that is the story. And sometimes, of course, he alludes to Shams, he mentions his name. And the Divan Palace, actually, if you do not take it as a piece of arrogance, he said that Shams is only an excuse to me. He was an excuse. Shams al Tabriz, what Zahanas, is exactly his body. He is and he was an excuse. He was just an instrument in order to put my hand into the hand of God, and that's over now. He is over now. Shams was an excuse, and now I have transcended him. Okay? So after Shams, he became another Shams for himself. And so this book, his own experiences, and his own joys and sufferings, and so on. So this is roughly 35,000 verses. I do not have the book here to show you. It's thicker, of course, than this volume. And let me say something, because now time is actually over. It's your turn now to explore observations and so on. We have got, fortunately, very good editions of Masnavi. And this is the last and the latest edition. And that's about me. So I actually did it on the basis of a manuscript which now is being kept at the Museum of Rumi in Konya. That is a very, very, very authentic edition. I have actually given the differences of my edition. Hassan, the British scholar, all Rumi scholars are in debt to him. And he was the first to actually make a very scholarly edition of Masnad. And then actually he translated the whole 25,000 verses into very good and very careful English. And then he wrote two volumes of commentary on this Masnad about 60 years ago. So for those of you who would like to know Rumi in a scholarly way, so please come to this Masnad in a little to read. Nicholson's edition still is the best. He was so faithful to the original and so careful in his rendering that sometimes, this is not my judgment, of course, because I cannot make this judgment, but this is according to the non-Persian reading people, the Americans, the British, and so on. Sometimes his style seems dull and exciting and does not convey the warmth of the style of Bahut, but it is very careful and perfect, I would say. Even to the extent that some of the Iranian scholars, Iranian scholars who would like to understand Rumi very well, sometimes they go to the translation of Nicholson in order to see what he has got to say about it and how he has understood it. Honestly, and really, it's the case. So he knew Persian very well, though he didn't visit Iran at all in his life, but he knew Persian that well. And we had such miracles in the history of Persian literature. We have got a very significant, very prominent poet, Iqbal, from Pakistan, who never visited Iran, but who knew Persian so well, that he is known among one of the greatest poets of Iran, indeed. And so that happened. Nicholson was no poet, of course, and he didn't write, as far as I know, anything in Persian, but his understanding of Persian was perfect. And the best test is his translation, that actually maybe one of the most difficult texts in Persian is Masnad. And he did the job of translation so well that he deserves every admiration and praise. So this, I tell you, in order to add another point. Now, this poor gentleman is re-editing his translation of Masnad into English because, of course, we are all fallible human mortal beings and nobody is exempt from making errors. So he has made some errors in his renderings, very few ones, and sometimes you might suggest some better wording. So that is a job which I have got at hand, and I hope that I will finish it very soon. So that is a promise to be fulfilled. But now you have got this, you have got the Nicholson's translation, which is the best so far. But as your moderator actually mentioned here, now Rumi in America, especially in America, is very in fashion. And I think thousands of copies of the translations of Rumi are being sold and bought and purchased everywhere. A gentleman who is called Coleman Barks, you are familiar with his name, yes, he has published, of course, he doesn't know Persian either. And he saved himself. And of course, Arbery, the British scholar, he had also translated some of some pieces of Rumi, including the friend of the Lord of Rumi, took some of those pieces to him and told him they are theirs in cage. So he raped them. And so he raped them. And now the emancipated or the liberated birds are in Bremen Lord's edition of Rumi, essential Rumi. That is a book. And you can, I think that is, that fits well to the taste of, I would say, Americans. So you can read it more easily and understand it and enjoy it. I guess, you know, it is not a whole master, it is just a very a small part of it. the Divan, due to its big it is not yet translated fully in English, but Nicholson himself has a selection of it, and that also you can find in English, and there are many other editions of the book. There are so many commentaries written in Persian and Arabic on Masnavi. There are translations of Masnavi into Arabic poetry, and for those of you who do not read Arabic or Persian, I mean, those may not be that used to. I have got a bibliography of the works written about Rumi and his teachings and his works. Unfortunately, we could not make a copy of it. I'm sure for the next session we will have those. Nicholson, really authentic. And I have to mention another name here, and that's Annemarie Schimmel. Schimmel, the German scholar who was a professor in Harvard for, I think, 25 years. So he's an expert on Rumi. On Islamic mysticism, Islamic Sufism, especially Rumi, and he's written a lot. And one of his finest, her finest works is I Am Wind, You Are Flame. And that is especially about the Rumi, the man, his life, and his teachings. And actually, the title is borrowed from Rumi himself. I am Wind, You Are Flame. So these are the preliminaries which perhaps I have to say at the beginning. Lord's daughter,
questions?
Yeah. I was wondering if you could tell us about Ghazali, because for those who don't know Ghazali, if you could put a distinction between Rumi and major Rumi, and prior to that, he was considered, in your opinion, a Ghazali.
Well, yes. Of course, I mean, Ghazali also deserves a long semester in order to be discussed. But, I mean, very, very briefly, of course, both Ghazali and Rumi were Sufis. Let me say a word about this Sufi. You see, mystic or the word mysticism in English may not convey the exact meaning of what we call it Sufi. You know, mystic comes from mystery, but in Arabic and in Persian, when we use the word Sufi, means a genre of Muslim scholars and spirituals who not only were knowledgeable enough in religious matters, but also had some spiritual experiences. And the word Sufi comes from the word Suf, which means womb. So they used to wear wool, actually dresses, in order to suffer from the hardness of, and to suffer from hardship. It was not soft dress, it was very coarse, you see. So Sufis actually, that was the style of the Syria's proof of the truth, but they were spiritual persons. But in the history of Islamic Sufism, we have got stages, we have got periods. Azadi belongs to the fear Sufism, of fearless Sufism, mysticism of fear, Sufism of fear. They were imbued with the fear of God. You see, love was marginalized to the mysticism, to the Sufism. But in the case of Rumi, he was a Sufi of love. So his was love mysticism. Whereas Azali's was fear mysticism. And there is a world of difference between the two. You will see in the case of Rumi that his main teacher and his main teaching is love. And he very explicitly said that in the religion of love there is no place for fear. That is what he says. Okay? As Rumi Nietzsche shares, in the religion of love there is no place for fear. That is what he says. But when you read Ghazali, for example, you help, actually. You will feel with fear. He depicts God as a very frightening figure. But according to Rumi, and according to his picture of God, he's a beloved. He's a beloved. Therefore, to enjoy sitting with him. So that's God's food of joy, which is sorrow. And he said, oh, behead the soul. The soul is to be beheaded. That's why, I make a distinction between the two kinds of Sufism, two kinds of mysticism, and two kinds of personalities we have got here. Azali and Rumi. Before he became a Rumi, he was a mystic, to be sure. He was a Sufi. He knew Sufism very well, but mostly fear mysticism, or fear Sufism. He had studied Azali very well. I have shown in one of my articles that perhaps more than 100 places he had borrowed very important ideas from Azali. But in one of his sayings, he never mentioned the name of Azali. None of his verses, not at all. I think it is different. He wants to tell us that he is broken. Altogether from Azali and his school. He never mentions his name, nor the name of some of his other teachers, such as Imam al-Haramain and some others. Because he was his teacher in theology. Azali was his teacher in ethics and morality and commentary and so on and so on. He never mentions none of these persons. The only name that he mentions is Shams. Shams was ever present, ever present. Now, but in one of his sayings that no behind in one of the books about him, he actually tells us that Azali was the world-class scholar. He was a world-class scholar, but he lacked love. You see, that is what he said. That is exactly what he said. He was how he recognized and how he defined as well. A world-class scholar, empty or deprived of love. Okay? So that is what he tried to supply into his scholarship. And when love came in, actually the whole scholarship vanished and disappeared and faded away. You see, nothing was left. He has got so many anecdotes, so many stories to tell us. And these are actually the subject of our later sessions. In one place he says that when a camel, as a guest, enters the nest of a bird, you have to imagine what would be made of the nest. A big camel in a tiny nest of a bird. That is exactly what he says. He was left with the kindness. Now the camel of love came, stepped into the nest. So the, everything was shattered, demolished, destroyed, virtually. So this kindness was the nest of knowledge, nest of religiosity, nest of clear mysticism, and many other things. Absolutely destroyed. And the camel of love actually built gradually his own house.
Any other questions?
Actually, I need to divert the topic, but just curious to know who was the master to Adali.
Sorry?
Who was the master to Adali?
The master of what?
Adali.
Ghazali, oh, the master of Ghazali. There are so many of them. Actually, one of the most well-known of them is Al-Juwaydi, you know, who was the teacher or the master of theology. Yes, and many others. I remember Rajmani, some others.
For those who are leaving next week, same time, same place, if you're interested, and we'll continue with questions for another 10 minutes or so. So.
Islamic literature, especially since it was forbidden, so it made more sense. You see, but they were using something which was forbidden, so it meant that kind of spiritual intoxication that they enjoyed and they experienced was something
teachers and also to define tradition.
Well, it's a very lengthy chapter in the history of Sufism. Of course, I mean, it's whirling dervishes ever to me. Dervishes never his followers. You know, somehow, this kind of burning and having music in their meeting, that was, I would say, I'm not saying that it was an invention of Rumi, but he developed it. I mean, enhanced it, strengthened it. And to the point that now, because, as you know, according to some of the Muslim Jewish music, especially the dance music is forbidden. So you should not practice, you should not perform, you should not listen to it. But Rumi himself, since he was a Muslim, he was a Jewish Muslim, according to his ethics, according to his account, this was not Jewish. Therefore, he practiced. And that was very notorious. So that was why it became one of the very conspicuous signs and symbols of this particular order. Therefore, whirling dervishes actually they belong to Rumi himself. I would say there is no evolution from Rumi to whirling dervishes. But then, of course, there are many other Sufi orders in Islamic history. Not necessarily, you cannot say that they are the evolution of Rumi or the Rumi teaching of Rumi. They are. I mean, there are so many of them.
Is there a spiritual connection between the five tradition and Rumi's
tradition? I personally do not know any particular spiritual connection. I cannot say.
You mentioned the days of
well, Chalabi, it appears that he is a person who was instrumental in the creation of the birth of Mahdi. He was one of the students, one of the followers of Rumi, of the students who were close to him, that into some second degree of Shamsi. Because of that, he was more in. The first one was created of them, and then his authentic song did not address the book to start writing or perhaps perform the message. So the name of some people might be taken, not immediately as far as they know, maybe one sort of quality of house, but many times, of course, it must be. Yes. And he was the Khalifa, you know, the successor of Rumi, Ali. And so yes, he had a very great place in the whole Mughal order.
I have a complicated question for a particular contrast of the Azali perspective and Rumi's was quite enlightening. Number of poets that were associated with
with the question of luck. No, because who is the greatest?
He's not biased.
I am a lover. I don't hide it here. Of Rumi, and he's my my main love in my whole life. But I think I am not biased. If what I'm saying here, this is absolutely fair. Both to the history, to you, to Rumi, and to Attar, and any other figure. Not only in the Western world, in the Western culture, but also in Persian literature, in Arabic. They may not remember any poem by these great men, such as Attar and so on. But I would say you wouldn't meet any Iranian who doesn't know some verses from Abu. See? So there is a poem which says there are three prophets in the whole world. Then he said these three prophets are Ferdowsi and Sa'di and Anwar. And when the poet was asked, so what would who be then? He said, not of God. Yeah, so that is the story. That is the real story. And no biased. He was the greatest one. He was the greatest one. No doubt about it. Abolished. Window determines how much light enters the house. See, the window determines how much light enters the house. The room was a bigger window. That is the light. Thank you very much.